welcome to the latest in my series of nostalgia interviews. My name is Chris DC, and my guest this week is Katie Hanrahan, who I first knew about 20 years ago when we were both students. I was doing my PhD, Katie was doing her undergraduate degree in religious studies at Lampeter. And in this week's interview, we talk about Teesside, post-war council estates, learning about people from different backgrounds, what it was like to return from university and seeing what, if anything, had changed. A passion for horses, 90s dance and nightclubs, Black Box and Ride on Time, the pleasures and pitfalls of working in special needs education, inspirational teachers, netball, driving a minibus, death and religion, Mark and Lard, negative relationship experiences, meeting the man of her dreams, whether Katie is still in touch with friends from her past, and having a very strong memory of past events. This interview was recorded in a restaurant near Durham, so apologies for the clatter, the sounds of pianos playing and children rushing back and forth. It's a very lively environment, but hopefully you'll be able to hear the interview without too much distraction. And it is my absolute pleasure this week to introduce Katie Hanrahan in the latest of the Nostalgia Interviews with Chris DC. Well, it is an absolute pleasure to be with Katie Hanrahan. Now, we were just saying, I haven't seen you in, what, 20 years?
Long time,
yeah.
Yes.
And so we were both at Lampeter together. And, of course, I taught you once upon a time. And also, embarrassingly, I think it was one of my very first lectures. And it would have been Christian Ethics. Would have been your first year.
Oh, I didn't realise it was your first teaching year then.
Oh, well, maybe then your apprehension was very different. Because mine was, they're thinking, what an imposter.
No, it was very good. Yeah, it was very good from what I remember.
But tell me a little bit then about where you're from. Because you're, obviously, I'm up in Durham at the moment. So I know you're from this area.
Yep, I'm originally from Teesside. And Teesside is a funny place because if you're from Teesside, we never actually know exactly where we are from, because the name has changed so much, even in my lifetime, that we don't actually know where we are. When you have a drop-down box, when you're putting in your address on the internet, and it says which county that you live in, our county just doesn't exist. So we're either placed in Durham or North Yorkshire, and it used to be called Cleveland.
Yeah.
But now it just seems to have been made up as Teesside or even Stockton-on-Tees, which is where I'm from.
But one thing I really noticed when I was at university is how many people, some of them I'm meeting this week, are from this part of the world. Because my sense now at university is that because of student fees, students tend to go much, or are far less inclined to go, you know, too far afield. So they might stay with their parents or they might have a job, and so it sort of restricts them in terms of the area where they're based. But I think in your case, you were one of many students who came from, say, the northeast of England.
Yeah, when I was at university, though, I don't think there was anybody from the northeast. I remember, I think there was one person, and they were from the same village, as a matter of fact, as where I was from, which was really quite funny. But yeah, where I grew up, you're kind of all bunched together. There's you've got to travel to get to other places. Teesside is very much on its own. Newcastle, for example, is an extra 45 minutes drive away, and so is York in the other direction. And apart from that, with Teesside, there's just us. Yeah. So when I went to Lampeter, I remember it being quite an eye-opener, because I thought that people would be like my circle of friends that I had, people that you grew up with and that you know, and they weren't. So that was quite an eye-opener. I remember being at a party in my first year at Lampeter, and somebody came up to me and said, "Wow, you speak very good English for a German." And that was when I realised that, oh, I do. Yeah. I must speak quite differently.
No, I was constantly humiliated. My very first year, there was a chap on my corridor in Burgess who was from Newcastle. Mm-hmm. And I always had to say, pardon, he spoke very quickly and with a very strong Geordie accent. And there was another girl from Rochdale, and she said, you know, what is it about me that you can't understand? Because I was from Cardiff, from South Wales. It just took a little while to adjust, really. Mm-hmm. But so your sense was that nobody sort of sounded like you or had what the same sort of background? Did you feel that, you know, you were...
Both, I think. Yeah. I think both. I remember very quickly that I learnt that I had to slow down. Like the speed of my speaking, which is what I did. And but yeah, interesting. Yeah. Yeah. I remember it being an eye-opener for
Absolutely.
Me.
And what did your parents do?
My parents are from council estates, post-war. So grandparents were in the war and, you know, come from a very young age. And so the council estates were erected for all these post-war men coming back, and my grandfathers were part of that. Mm. So from council estate, my parents met, and they managed to move off council estate, which was quite an achievement, really. So I grew up not on a council estate, but still, it's not an affluent area, Teesside, or it certainly wasn't when I was young. Yeah. It was all very industry. Mm. British Steel and ICI were the main places, and you knew somebody in your family worked for that organisation when I was a child, and it's such a shame that a couple of years ago that was all stopped and knocked down, which is, it's been a big heartache for the area in Teesside, because that was its heritage, really.
And were you first generation university?
Yes. Yes, I am.
I don't think there's a single person who's given a different answer to that question.
Right. Yes,
certainly
in recent interviews. Yeah. So I was the first person, really. But when I went to school, we had no careers advice at all. There was nothing. It didn't exist. So when you left school, it was you were at a loss on what to do, really. So unless you had somebody in your family, like your father or your mother, who had a business, and you knew that you were going to go into that business, which is what happened in a lot of the cases, then you didn't really know what to do. So it was assumed that you would just go to college or a technical college. So that's I didn't have a clue what I wanted to do. So that's where I ended up in a college. And I just kind of followed the system because I didn't really know what else to do.
Yeah.
Also in Teesside, when I was a child, I came from a small village, and there were no... black people, there were no coloured people, no nothing. Everyone was white British. Yeah. Everybody was from Teesside. And certainly if there were any of a different denomination, then they didn't stay very long. Yeah. Probably because it was hard. They found it difficult to fit in, looking back. So when I started doing religious studies at school, I found it very interesting, because then it was suddenly learning about other people from different backgrounds to myself, and I loved learning about it. But as I grew up, my mother was always questioning me, what do you think about that, what do you think about this, and I think that's probably where I got my questioning nature from, because I had that instilled in me from a very young age.
Because it says something, doesn't it, about different, I mean, my grandfather was the same, fought in the Second World War and would have loved to have gone to university, but that just wasn't an opportunity open to him back in the 1930s or 40s. But it's interesting that you had that sort of inquisitive mind, but you were able to apply it to, you obviously ended up in Lampeter, but that doesn't mean to say that other people in your family couldn't have gone to university, just they didn't have the same social mobility.
Yeah.
I mean, you literally went from one end of the country to the other and thrived. But of course, then you came back to this region, and I'm guessing that changed you somewhat. You know, to come back after 3 years at University of Wales, what was your perception then when you came back to Teesside, having been away so long?
I remember walking into the local pub and thinking, nothing has changed, and being quite frustrated about it, that I'd been away for 3 years and I'd come back and it was still the same people sitting in the same seats drinking the same drink.
Yeah.
I remember feeling really frustrated. You know, go out there, go somewhere. And loads of people from Teesside have been to London, for instance.
Yeah.
And but I also feel quite lucky that I did have that opportunity and I took it. But when I was a child, we went on holidays, nothing extravagant, but we went to Wales on holidays. Scotland is quite close to where I am. So my first choice was Lampeter, because I did have memories of Wales. I grew up in the countryside, so I wasn't interested in being in a big city. So that was the big pull for that place.
What about very earliest memories? So you mentioned that you used to go on these holidays to Wales, but how far can you go back? What do you remember from childhood?
When I was very little, it was we would stay in caravans in North Yorkshire, And it was always a friend of a friend or an uncle of a friend has got a caravan, so you took that opportunity and you stayed in that caravan. They were cold, but it was really good fun. No toilets, of course. Very, very outdoors, but that was what I was always brought up to be around. Yeah. In the countryside, we would put your wellies on and go out, and even at home, I have the countryside right now, my doorstep was quite lucky in that. So those are my very first memories of Blackpool, Whitby, Russop, all little villages.
Yeah, Blackpool, because I think we were in touch through social media. You picked up on the fact that I spent a night in Blackpool last August, and that was an eye opener.
Yes, honest.
And it was just the one night.
You'll never be the same again once you've been to Blackpool. Yeah,
no, that is true. That is true. But what about things that you really enjoyed doing as well? I mean, do you remember anything from musically or films? Just things that you used to do. In terms of play, sports, for example.
When I was young, it was animals. Yeah. Everything was animals. I think I've got a hamster graveyard in our old house where I grew up, and that's not because I ended up killing them, but because I had so many. Yeah. And then eventually, it was horse riding was my passion, and looking after horses, and I had horses from a very young age. Again, I was lucky in that respect. It's much more expensive now to keep a horse as it was then. Yeah. And when I went to university, it was my mum that looked after my horse while I was at Hunter. And then when I came back, that was the major reason, which is why I stayed in Teesside, was my horses. I stayed and had my horse back, and then I continued it and got more and more. And
yeah.
So that's the main reason why I stayed in the area, and I only really moved out of the area of Teesside to Durham when I no longer had my horses. So there was no reason to stay there anymore because my family had moved to Durham.
Is that a family sort of custom? I mean, horses, was that something that you wanted to do that was your choice, something that really gave you passion, or did you come from a family where maybe you want a farm or in proximity to a farm?
My mother was always pushing me to try and find something like a hobby. So I remember I'd been to dancing and I didn't like that, and I remember I went to the brownies and I didn't like that because on the third day when they were sorting you into your groups, I got put in the norm group, and I didn't want to be in the normal group because when you read Enid Blyton books, the norms are ugly and naughty, and I didn't want that, so I never went back again.
Yeah, it's funny about being a child, because I've got an older sister, and of course part of me kind of followed in her footsteps. She also went to Lampeter. She was there for a period. We coincided.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, but also, and she's also a university lecturer at a different university. But it's interesting how sometimes, she was learning to play the piano, and when I was like 3 or 4, I was like, oh, I want to do that, and so I did, but I hated it, and that was the problem. And I think it took me many years to sort of think, actually, there are things I want to do, but I just didn't have the means to even ask the right questions, or there were no radio was this huge passion. I should have considered doing something in that area. But that's interesting you said dance, because that's something that children will often do, and sometimes they have to go back to it later on. One of my daughters absolutely hated dancing, but you kind of thought she definitely has talent in that area, but maybe she's just a bit too young. We left it a year, and now she does ballet and she's thriving at it.
I think I was quite good at it, but I think there was had an experience there which I think scared me. I think somebody was late to come and pick me up, and I think that that put me off after that. But no, I do have to thank my mother for all of this, because she was the person who was pushing me. I do think that's where everything comes from, I think, is your parents. Yeah. If you've got somebody behind you pushing you and supporting you, then you can go on all the way. And if you haven't got that, then...
So they must be really proud of you, because you did manage to get away and you managed to do what you wanted to do, and in that sense to this day, it's clear just from the conversation we were having before we started recording, the way that your university years really shaped you.
I think so. I think they brought me up to be always questioning and just think about things and just go for it. So I think I'm a product of that, what they brought me up to.
And what about things, I mean, that for me, when I was really young, and because it was a pre-social media age, but the charts, sort of the music, the fashion of the time, I was never exactly, the coolest kid. You mentioned about being normal. I would have done anything to be normal. I was never in that box. But what about things that were, you know, the sounds of the time? What impact did they have on you?
I was a child of the 80s. Yeah. I was oblivious, really, to anything that was really going on. It kind of washed over me. So I didn't like the music at the time. I didn't like the fashion at the time. I just kind of went with it because everybody else was. It wasn't my kind of thing. But then the 90s happened, and I was just a preteen when the 90s started, and then dance music occurred. And I remember listening to, was it Ride on Time?
Black Box.
Yes, yeah. Black Box. I remember hearing that, and I must have been about 10 years old.
Yeah, that was 89,
thinking,
yeah.
Yes, I remember thinking, my goodness, what is this? And then I love music after that. It was the dance music, much to my parents' horror, that I was into. It wasn't what they had brought me up to.
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because, well, it's the same here in a way that I've got, you know, interest that my parents never had. But in a way, you just sort of, you know, the main thing is that you've got someone who can push you in the right direction. And for me, I was at a conference some years ago with a doctor. She was from Liverpool, and her phone went off while she was about to give a talk, or you know, just to say a few words about the text that we were reading for that seminar. And I think she was training to be a priest. And she suddenly on her phone, we had this, "You're so ostentatious." gotta get up. And of course, everyone was like, "What is that racket?" And I said, "Black Box, Ride on Time in 1989. That was my GCSE, you know, synonymous with waiting for those GCSE results." But that's interesting.
Yeah, so that was it, and that started it off. No. So I was drinking and clubbing by the time I was 15. Mm. Not because I was a wayward child, but because that's everyone was doing. And dressing probably inappropriately, but again, that's what everyone was doing. So I like my little short skirts and little dresses.
So was that very much a sort of like Friday night thing at a local disco, or bigger events?
Oh, it was a nightclub. Supposed to be 18 to get in, but of course nobody was once you got inside. So again, when I went to Lampeter, it was a bit of a shock that not everybody had those same experiences that I had. Because we were sitting and drinking on the local green with the bottles of cider, you know, 14 and 15. Yeah.
It's funny, but the thing that you do find, and you probably found this at Lampeter as well, is that, you know, something levels out. I mean, I went there really with, like, I felt zero life experience compared to other people. I'd never worked. I mean, my students nowadays have jobs before they go to university and at university, whereas I spent more than 3 years at Lampeter, you know, where I was able to focus on the degree. But I think there was something missing in that process, and I kind of felt that there was a bit of levelling out, that, you know, I had a bigger trajectory in some ways, but you probably had a similar sort of experience just from the other direction, that you found in some ways you might have been more experienced than some of the other students, or you'd had experience of going to, you know, and for me, at the age of 18, going down the Union Bar was like, wow, I've never been out this late before. It's crazy looking back. But, you know, somehow by the end of that 3 years, we all kind of coalesce, we all kind of find our own level.
Mm-hmm. I was quite lost when I left university, and that kind of achieved what it was that I wanted to achieve, and it was like, well, what do I do now? Yeah. So I was a bit, and I think probably a lot of people who left Lampeter probably did feel like that. Yeah. Again, it was what am I going to do with this degree now I've got, found myself suddenly back at home. What do I do next?
Yeah, and was that a real struggle for you after
that
you left?
That was, definitely. That was probably the time that I struggled the most,
Did you manage to resolve that? And did you ever find something that suited what you wanted to do, or was it a case of spending a long time in a kind of almost like limbo or purgatory type place? Which a lot of people do. Loads of people go back to their parents and, you know, have to have this great coming of age narrative, and then like, oh, I've changed, but as you said, when you returned and mm-hmm. found the same people sitting in the same seats in the same bars, like something's still very much the same.
Yeah.
And that must have been really frustrating. You probably had this real urge to sort of, it's like these twin narratives, twin yes. trajectories, and you perhaps felt that you were on the wrong one.
I don't think I'd changed. I don't think I'd changed that much. But I found it, I fell into a job, yeah. which then became my career.
Yeah.
Didn't search for it, I just fell into it. It found me, I think. But I found it difficult to be able to work full time and have fun.
Yeah.
Have fun going to yeah. all the places that I yeah. still wanted to go to.
Yeah.
So I found it hard to juggle that.
Yeah.
But my job, I started working in a local secondary school. This is in the heart of Middlesbrough, so it was tough.
Yeah.
I got pushed, spat on, name called. It was a hard school.
Yeah.
Stopping fights. But I found that that was my niche. I found I was very good at it.
Yeah.
These difficult kids yeah. who had...
Was this primary age?
This was secondary.
Secondary.
Who had come from terrible backgrounds and had terrible stories, and they were even... didn't know they were young. And I just found that I could connect with them and help them, really.
Yeah.
And that was what I continued to do. I worked in special needs for 20 years. So.
Wow, mm-hmm. yeah. So, yeah, I've got a few friends who do similar things, and actually with a degree in religious studies.
Yeah.
And I think the reason I feel in some ways very blessed in terms of the career I've got is that I've always loved my subject and I've been able to communicate that to an audience who want to learn. You know, if they didn't want to learn, they wouldn't be there. We're not forcing them to be there. They're adults. But in your case, I don't know, you probably didn't get much chance to use the content of your degree, but you may have learned a different set of skills in terms of discipline and class, and for that matter, playground management.
Well, yes, I started out, it did help me get into it, because I started out helping an RE teacher in secondary school who wasn't very well. So I went in for experience, really, because I was thinking about becoming an RE teacher. And it was while I was there that I tended to not be teaching the RE content, but rather splitting up the fights, sorting out the argument that's happening at the back of the classroom, sorting out the child who's in tears, the child who's struggling, the child who can't read. That I tended to go towards that instead. So that's what I ended up doing.
Yeah, and for 20 years you were doing
yeah.
that. Yeah. And did you feel that you changed at all in that? I mean, did you, by the end of that, was it the case that they respected you too much not to spit at you or assault you? Or was it the case that you just responded in a way that was something that through experience was manageable? Or was it always like every day going in thinking, I can't do this?
I didn't leave. I think that's
yeah.
that's the
but it sounds, that's what I mean. It sounds really impressive, yeah.
I didn't leave and I just got on with it. But you got trained in it and you learn a new set of skills in dealing with it. But I think the character of myself was just being able to identify which of the children were struggling and ultimately understand why from where they came from.
Yeah.
That's the heart of it.
And were there any particular things that you learned from that? I mean, in many cases, I'm guessing it may be parental or family or a lack of, you know, in some cases maybe neglect. But did you sort of feel at the end of it that you managed to save a few children, or, you know, was there a sense at the end of it maybe some of them may have gone on to A level or to university? Did you ever sort of follow any of the pupils to that
age?
No idea
how any of them have done. Like professionalism really calls for to not follow
the
children's careers, but I'd like to think that I had some impact, and even just a little bit of self-belief or self-worth. Then I feel I'd have achieved something if I had came out with a little bit of that.
Yeah. But I mean, it works both ways, doesn't it? Because I mean, very occasionally, and of course often it might be somebody wanting a reference, which is perfectly understandable, somebody will say, oh wow, you taught me 10, 15 years ago and, you know, I want to go into teaching, or, you know, I've never forgotten those essays I wrote or whatever it might be, and it sort of made me think that this might be a better way of thriving or, you know, moving on with my life. And I think in your case, it sounds as though, you know, you weren't doing it for the glory. You know, you weren't sort of thinking, oh, I'm doing this, but they're going to come back and say, oh, you were so wonderful. But you actually were helping them. And they probably, you know, maybe they look back now. I mean, I'm guessing some of those would now be well into their 20s or more. And actually, you probably just, listen, you know, maybe listen to them in a way that wasn't happening in their lives outside
absolutely.
Of school.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
You know, so if you were just saying, oh, this is discipline, we're going to tell you off, we're going to make you stand in the corner, you know, well, what are they going to say, oh, yeah, all right, yeah, I'm going to conform from now on? It sounds as though you probably had a set of skills that made sure that you listened to them and understood where they were coming from, and they may have respected you.
It was giving them another opinion, like somebody else to... of a different background to hear what else they can do in their lives. I remember there was a 15-year-old who said to me, because I must have been 22 at the time, and she asked me, she said, do you have any children? I said, no. She said, how old are you? I said, I'm 22. She went, oh, you're 22 and you don't have children? I said, no. She said, oh, my dad says, as soon as I leave school, I've got to have a baby and then I can get a house.
Yeah.
So that was all her aspirations were, was to leave school, have a child so she could get a house. And a lot of the children, that was their attitude.
Yeah.
And it was quite sad.
Yeah.
So to kind of bring a different perspective into them, even if it just gets through a little bit, might help.
But, and also because you kind of broke, well, your cycle was a different one, but you also didn't conform to that particular stereotype, that archetype. And in that sense, the fact that you didn't have the same life story, at least it would have thought, oh, there is an alternative possibility. It may not have worked for that child. Actually, it makes me think of the film Fever Pitch, you know, from the Nick Hornsby novel, where there's a scene where you've got a teacher and she's telling the parents, I think she's a history teacher, and she's saying, yeah, she's okay with the ancient, maybe not so much with the 20th century, but she's going to the detail. And the parents are looking at each other like, why are you telling us this? And they say, she wants to be a hairdresser. And the teacher's like, oh, as in, you know, whether she's more into the Tudors or the Stuarts kind of isn't really relevant. And I think that's from the parents. And I think, so she thought, this child has potential, but obviously not quite the case. You know, so in a way, you've got to change the culture rather than necessarily, you know, individually, yes. You're not going to get through to an individual child if the whole sort of like superstructure doesn't accommodate that.
Well, hopefully I did have an impression on them because I was of a similar age bracket, really, not that too much older than them, so... Fingers crossed that they turned out.
Absolutely, yeah. What about teachers who inspired you when you were at school, and also for that matter when you were at university? What sort of, who were the people who made an impact on you, who made you, in a sense, do what you went on to do?
Oh, that's really easy. And he's a man called Victor Wotton. And he was my college teacher. Was really down to earth. We had a small class, doing an RE class. It was always a very small class, but he was just brilliant. And he was more of like a coaching life coach as well. That it's okay to do. It's okay to go out drinking. You know, it's okay to do this. And just an amazing man. And he also wrote the syllabus, I think, for GCSE.
Yeah.
And he wrote the book that we were following for the exam. And he knew of Lampeter when I said to him, oh, I'm thinking of Lampeter. Yeah. And he said, oh, yes, you'll love it there. You'll really fit in there. Yeah. And how right he was. Yeah.
And were you in touch with him afterwards? Did he know what happened after you left school?
I wasn't, because when I left college, of course, there was no social media.
Yeah.
I didn't have phones.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he retired in that same year, so no, I haven't been in touch with him since.
There are cases sometimes when it's difficult, because I find that when I did go back to see some of my even primary and secondary school teachers after I went to university, that there's almost like a sense of regression. There's almost a sense that, you know, the last time I saw that person, I was 10 years old. And it's almost like you have to justify, you know, what you've achieved in the time since, because, you know, in some cases you might now be more qualified than they were. And it takes some strange adjusting. You know, that authority figure is now someone who's a peer. But I remember I did write to some of the teachers who made a difference. You know, I was quite selective.
Mm-hmm.
So some really did make an impression. And that was nice of you. That was a way of saying thank you. You know, in a sense, it may have been a job. It was a job to you, but actually it was inspiring. And I wouldn't be where I am today if it hadn't been for that grounding at a formative age. So, that's lovely. Well, if he's still around, or if he hears this, I'm sure he'd be really touched, really grateful.
Yes, hello, Vic, if you listen.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And then what about other things at university? Because things, I mean, Lampeter, bizarrely for someone like me who was studying religion and film, there, apart from the art school on a Sunday night, which was a terrific ritual, there, you know, cinema wasn't the obvious place to go, and I didn't drive, so my Saturdays were spent in Swansea. I used to get the Trouse Cambria bus down to the big city.
Wow, you managed to get out, did you, occasionally?
I did, in later years, yeah. Wow. And I got the hang of it, and then actually I felt, you know, when I got back, I was like, oh, I had the urge to do it all over again. But is that something that you didn't do?
When I was there, yeah. Going, no, watch films, no. But I've never been a big film person anyway, or TV person, to be honest. So I tend to hear about it through other people. Oh, did you see so-and-so last night? You've got to watch it. It was about, and then I'll watch something. But I'm not really a film person, really, yeah. I'm afraid.
So what did you do at university in that sense? and obviously you can answer this in a way that is comfortable for you to answer. But well, apart from the study, what sort of stands out as the sort of the background?
The union, drinking, of course. Yeah. Yes, drinking. I was also involved in netball, so it wasn't all drinking.
I remember that now, actually.
Yeah. So, and I ran the netball team in my final year, eventually. Yeah. So, yeah, and drove the minibus yes.
So you could drive when you were at university. Wow, okay. So you were, you would have been a real sort of, what's the word I'm looking for, commodity, you know, you were, you know, somebody, a student who could drive, that was a rare thing in those days, a minibus.
Asked, yeah.
You had to sit the infamous minibus test.
Yes. Yeah.
in a town with no roundabouts and no traffic lights, no dual carriageways.
But a roundabout did appear in my final year, it did. Yeah. But no, I think the test was, can you reverse it? Yep. Can you go forward? Yep. Right, that's it. Yeah, you can drive the minibus.
So were you going around the country? Because I assume that you would have been playing against teams from not just Wales, but presumably nationally.
Yes, we were in the league, so it was the South Wales League. So yes, all around South Wales we would drive to every Sunday. Eventually, thankfully, they came up with the idea of just going to a central place and we all just meet up. And they did that one year, which was a bit better.
And were there any particular matches that stand out? I mean, how successful on balance? You can embellish this as much as you like, but were you, I mean, generally, you were in the top league, so I'm guessing there were quite a few wins.
I remember in my first year we did really well. Can't recall where we came, but that was the almost successful year from the time that I was there. But we didn't have that many people interested in netball, so I remember just going into the union and just grabbing anyone, boys, girls, who would just come and just want some extra training so we could play against somebody.
So what was the ratio between male and female students who played netball? I'm guessing, I'm assuming it was predominantly female.
It was all female, people who'd come to practices, I would just grab anybody. Yeah. Mainly friends I would just cajole into coming to play against. Lots of people helped out for us to, because I think we only had about 9 people, we need 7 for a match.
Yeah.
And to have a team to play against, it was difficult.
Yeah.
But so it was difficult. When I was running it, I just said to people, look, if you turn up to practices, every practice, then you'll get to play in the match on Sunday.
Yeah.
And that was how I did it, because I think some people who were good players were just thinking that they could go to the to the match and that was it. Didn't have to go to practice, and I didn't feel that was fair.
Yeah.
So in our third year we didn't do very well, but we went.
So was it a real sense of discipline, of structure? It sounds as though the commitment that anybody had to show for the team was, you know, very much on a par with obviously everything else that the degree that everybody was there for. But it sounds as though you pushed everybody, but you got the reward for that.
I was just trying to be fair, and I didn't feel that it was fair that if you didn't go to practices that you still played in a match, and that was how I wanted to do it. So
What about other things? Because obviously you studied religious studies, and I don't know if it was ever the same with you, but certainly outside, and my students often refer to this, outside of the lecture room, where nobody ever asks the question about, you know, why are you doing this, why are you studying this, but the question of, you know, in a way that you wouldn't ask somebody who was doing history or doing English or a language, why are you studying those particular subjects, but you get a different set of questions. I mean, did you find that you had a very sort of straightforward answer to give people who said, why were you studying religion? Or did it just not arise at all for you?
No, I still get questions of, oh, why did you study that? Are you religious?
Yeah.
And the honest answer is, no, I'm not religious, but I find it fascinating learning and knowing about other people's opinions and what they believe.
Yeah.
And that's ultimately what it is.
No, it is, and that's why sometimes we have students who might want to go and say the police force, because they say, well, or into law. They might have to do a law conversion course first. But having a background in religious studies means that you're sensitive to these sort of questions, which, of course, in the real world matter. I mean, often there was, certainly when I was at Lampeter, some people might say, oh, yeah, but if you say anything negative about religion, or conversely say something positive about a faith tradition, that will be reflected in the mark that you get. But of course, that's not the way
I mean,
anecdotally, that sort of thing happened. But I'd be horrified if that thing certainly were to happen today, certainly where I work. I mean, it would be a complete line crossing on the part of the lecturer who would then, you know, sort of say, oh, I don't agree with this student, therefore I will give them a lower mark. But so it sounded as though you sailed through and found that it was...
Yeah, it never entered my mind that if I said something, it wouldn't be... Yeah. It would be looked down or frowned upon. It didn't enter my mind at all.
Yeah.
Just from the background of my teaching that I'd already had.
Yeah. And did the degree... By the sound of it, it did. But did the degree that you did then help you in the special needs education that you went on to do in terms of cultural understanding and diversity?
Yes, definitely. But I also think it's part of the person that I am, and that I think I mentioned earlier about me being able to question things and look a bit more deeply into things. And I think with RE as well, you need to be able to pass over into another person's shoes to see things from their perspective and from their side, and then you can then unravel things to help people.
Yeah.
And I think that's where it comes into play in my line of work.
Yeah. And is there anything that really stands out from the degree at Lampeter? Do you sort of think, wow, that module, or was there anything that sort of made you think, oh, that's not what I expected? Because, I mean, in my case, I did A-level religious education, I think it was called, and it was all biblical study, it was all scripture.
Right.
So I went to university and was suddenly discovering church history, I was discovering religion and media, and obviously religion and film was more my thing later on. But, you know, I really came away from the degree having learned something that I didn't go into that necessarily expecting to study, and all the better for it. So I was expecting something a bit more parochial, and I came away, you know, fascinated by questions about myth and questions about the sanctity of life and all sorts of things. And even the disestablishment of the church in Wales, it's like, where did that come from? But yeah, so was there anything that really sort of stands out for you?
Well, I remember thinking about going back to Lampeter and looking back as an 18-year-old, I would never have thought I would have ever contemplated going back to study it, but it was religion and death, death and religion, and I was wanting to go back, but when I looked into it, of course, the costs just couldn't do it. But yeah, I would never have thought that I would be interested in looking at that.
No, because I do a course on that. You know this from what I post on social media sometimes, but death and the afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
And when I put up some stuff about near-death experiences one week, suddenly, you might have been one of them, loads of, from different generations, Lampeter students were like, I did that with Paul Badham back in whichever year it was. And they were people I knew, but for many years, in some cases, decades apart. But they were, you know, Lampeter was very special in terms of some of the quirky subject areas that it offers. And so that, I mean, that death and immortality MA, which I actually did have the luxury of doing, but yeah, it was, you know, to this day I still draw on that sort of resource material for my own teaching and research.
Yes, I bet it was very interesting.
Yeah,
I remember looking at it in philosophy while I was at college, so yes, it would have been interesting, but it never happened.
Yeah. Politics, did that come in? My sense in Lampeter, nobody really bothered to vote. I sort of got this, elections used to pass everyone by. I think it's different now. Students now, in the last couple of years, have really started engaging. But did anything, I mean, when you would have gone, it would have been just a year after Tony Blair, New Labour. Did any of that really impact on you or your contemporaries?
No, I was out of it really. You didn't have a television, so I was out of touch with the outside world.
Yeah.
Wow. So no.
Yeah. Well, that's great. Well, see, that's the one thing about Lampeter is because of its location. Some people will go there and just say, "I hate it because I expect something bigger." But if, like you and like me, you go there sort of knowing that it's small scale, you can enjoy it more because your expectations, I'm not going to say are lower, because in a way they're higher, because you expect something else from it. As long as you can match and, you know, you're comfortable with that level, actually it can be a really remarkable place where you get to meet the most amazing, diverse people, but also get a chance to study, but in the right balance. You're not worried about commuting from one end of a city to another. And, you know, yes, in some ways, looking back, how did I manage all those years without a cinema? But actually, the fact that there wasn't one meant that I could really look forward to those weekends, and I'd worked, would work extra hard in the week, almost then to ensure that I justified that afternoon out, as it may have been on a Saturday.
Yeah, no, I loved it because I love the countryside anyway. Yeah. It was something that I was familiar with. Yeah. And I liked Wales from my holidays. Yeah. I fitted in.
Yeah, and so you may not have had a television. What about radio? Because for me, radio was the utter soundtrack to everything I did.
Yes, Radio 1. Yeah. And I can't remember the name of those two.
Mark and Lard?
That's
it. I don't know why you didn't have
it.
Yeah.
That's it, yeah. Yeah, it was listening to those, really.
Yeah.
But I had my CDs as well.
Yeah. No, when I first went there, I inherited my sister's record player. So I was just about the generation where, you know, playing vinyl. Unusually, it was sort of CDs were much more in keeping, but yeah, that was good. What about some more sort of broader philosophical questions to end? Would you say that your memories are predominantly positive ones? Sounds like they are, when you survey your whole life.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
I loved my childhood. I had a lovely childhood. In those days, it was Mum stayed at home, looked after the children, brought up the children. The dads went out to work.
Yeah.
Lived in a typical terraced street, as you do in the northeast.
Yeah.
And I do remember there was a mother who moved into the street. She didn't have a husband.
Yeah.
And she worked.
Yeah.
And that was really different.
And was it felt groundbreaking, or was it thought, you know, stigma? Because I'm guessing you'd have a different answer now to 30 years ago.
It was gossip, but of course she was welcomed. But again, I don't think she was from the area. Never really mixed in with the other mothers.
Yeah.
That's what she was working.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because certainly my grandparents' generation, I think my grandfather's mother had to leave her teaching job when she got married because it was incompatible. You had to be, you know, when I was at school, we'd always say yes. And one of our teachers hated it when she called the register and we answered yes, Mitch. She would tell us, no, I'm a married woman, I'm very happy to be married. You know, but so in those days, marriage was incompatible with teaching. So, you know, once you found a husband and had children, unless you were a widow, which is what happened in my grandfather's mother's case, and when she returned to teaching, then your prospects were very limited.
Yeah. My mother met my father, and then when they got married, and she gave up work to have children, which is very typical from where I grew up.
Yeah. And do you think it's possible to be nostalgic about negative experiences? I mean, I ask that question in the light that sometimes, I look back on my Lampeter days, and some of them are terrific. But also I knew that there were challenges. I mean, you know, parochially, yes, you'd be worried about the next essay or you'd be worried about what you're going to do when you leave. But also, you know, sometimes there's character building.
I had some of my worst times, I think, at Lampeter, as well as the best. I think the worst times in my life have all been failed relationships.
Mm.
And that's what everything kind of negative stems around, really.
Yeah.
It's taken me up until just recently to find the person I want to be with the rest of my life and have children. So that's a long time of negative relationships. Fortunately, I kept falling in with people who are either manipulative or didn't put the relationship first, put other things first, and that wasn't what I wanted. So, but unfortunately, I'm the type of person where I give people the benefit of the doubt and give them chances, and I try and work at it until it's got to be totally ended before I walk away.
Yeah.
But yeah, those are the negative things in my life.
Yeah, because for me, it's only in the last year or 18 months that I came across the term gaslighting. And I almost feel that you know, if I do something outside of academic writing, I feel, you know, the life experience that I've had, sometimes, you know, you see these traits, and sometimes you say, you know, if you're somebody who wants to give somebody the benefit of doubt, it's really hard then when you really want to work at something and then find that actually somebody's playing you in a particular way.
Yeah.
And what that does to you and your self-esteem, and how different then you compare that to the when you were 22 to that girl who just assumed that, you know, the moment you leave school, presumably at the age of 16, you would just, have a child, and presumably have a child with somebody who themselves might not necessarily be marriage material.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's extraordinary, isn't it, how sometimes you find yourself a bit older, maybe a bit wiser, but still looking at that, you know, that dream. I mean, children have it with princesses, don't they? You know, sort of my daughter's like, I want to be a Disney princess, but actually it's the same thing. You want to meet the man or the woman of your dreams, and you kind of, you know, you can still believe in that, no matter how old you are, no matter how wizened you're, you know, sometimes no matter how many bad knocks you have, sometimes that dream is still there, and it worked out for you.
Well, I didn't want to have children straight away. I always wanted to find somebody, do the idealistic way of meeting somebody, settling down, buying a house, having children. And as relationships just went by after relationship after relationship after relationship, it just never happened. I just didn't find the right person to settle down with. So I ended up being at the age of 38 and still not having my house that I wanted, because I wanted to do it with a person who was special to me. It still hadn't happened.
Yeah.
So in the end, I had to realise that I had to change things, and I had to do it on my own.
Yeah.
So I bought my house, but then as soon as I buy my house, I meet the man of my dreams. As it happens.
So you're living out the Disney narrative.
I am now, just a bit backward.
That's all right. Well, because my next question was going to be, have you fulfilled the dreams you had when you were young? Sounds like, I suppose it depends which dreams, and, you know, there's career dreams, there's relationship dreams, but would you say that, you know, do you still entertain thoughts about doing something different with your life that, you know, might be in keeping with what you dreamt about as a child or at university?
I didn't really have many dreams as such as a child. I'm kind of a person where I just go with the flow, go with what's next and just see what happens. I didn't, because I think you'd be terribly disappointed if you have something in your head, even though I did have the wanting to meet the man and settle down. But yes, I think I have, because now I've met a man I'm very happy with. I have a beautiful daughter and a rabbit, which is what I wanted.
Although I've just seen the film Us. Don't see, if you like rabbits, don't go and see Us. Which is it's a horror film, and to this day, anyway, there's a connection there. Donnie Darko also comes to mind. That's wonderful. Two more questions. Are you in touch with friends from your past? Well, I'm guessing they may not be entirely your past, because maybe you still have the same network that you had when you were at school, or have you lost touch with some of those contemporaries?
No. There's one friend I'm particularly in touch with, and that's a very dear friend of mine, Caroline, and that's who I lived with for the full 3 years at university. And she's coming up next month, actually, to come for my daughter's birthday. But yes, very much in touch with her and her husband. We have been since university. Other than that, really, it's just through Facebook. I would love to get in touch with other people who I used to knock around with, but life has a way of just getting away with you, and people move to different places and it gets difficult to catch up, but I think it's important to.
And the Lampeter Society, even though it's an online site, you know, you can still carry on some of those strands, because in the real world there's no way, you're apart from reunions and family commitments sometimes prohibit that. Then you know, it's I think that, you know, particularly at formative stages in your life, it's really important that you, it's also a sense of where you come from, what your roots are, and who you are. So, you know, looking back, and I think, which is going to be my next question, actually, which was, are you a looking back or a looking forward kind of person?
I would say probably a bit of both. I've got a very, very, very good memory on things from the past. I can remember going places and what I was wearing, what other people were wearing. I can remember people's names at primary school, where I'll speak to other people and they can't. And I do often think about the past, but always fondly. And looking forward, well, who knows? I just kind of go with the flow. But it's always with happiness. I'm quite an optimistic person, so.
Well, it has been so nice to catch up with you after so many decades
I know.
Up here in the Northeast. So, Katie, wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thank you.